Jambo fellow adventurers. Woo! I have to tell you, as a speaker, how meaningful it is for me to be invited back to a place that I've already spoken to before. Especially to an audience as esteemed as yourself. It is really and truly an honor. And I'm sure it has nothing to do with the fact that you're in between ministers. Well, as you heard today, I'm going to be talking about the miraculous mechanics of manifestation. And so I figured, what better place to begin to talk about the mechanics of manifestations than with the very first manifestation ever? The jungles of time and space. Don't they boggle your mind? Don't you wonder how it all came about? What mind could have dreamed the undreamable? The spectacular beauty, the impossible perfection, the unimaginable vastness. Do you know our mainstream scientists estimate that there are at least 100 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy, and that there are 100 billion more galaxies, not to mention planets. But yet, of this little jewel that we now call home, the same scientists estimate that there are at least 100 million different species, of which we are one, inhabiting air, land, and sea. Every nook and cranny, crack and crevice on the planet is teeming with life. Did you know that there are microorganisms that thrive in hot lava pits? Did you know that there are whales off of Canada in the Atlantic that communicate by song to whales 2,000 miles away in the Caribbean? Did you know that there are birds in Russia, the Arctic tern, that take off at the onset of winter to fly 10,000 miles away for warmer weather in Australia, much of it flown while they sleep? That's like flying from West Palm Beach to New Delhi, and 6 months later coming back. And in your own backyard, there are caterpillars that fell asleep only to wake up as butterflies. Doesn't it boggle your mind? Don't you wonder how it all came to be? What mind could have conceived of the inconceivable details necessary? I was wondering these exact thoughts a few years ago, every time I would take a break from writing in my own backyard, to the point that it would hurt. And then one day, as if struck by lightning, I had the answer. Gave me total peace. And I since put that answer into a daily note from the universe that might give you the same peace. I'd like to share it with you now. Do you think I studied quarks, atoms, and molecules? Do you think I drew schematics for the sun, the moon, and the stars? The otter, the Gila monster, and the penguin? Do you think I painted every zebra, flower, and butterfly? Or do you think I simply imagined the end result? And therein lies the greatest secret of the mechanics of manifestation. That every manifestation, yours, mine, from up above, begins with the end. The end forces the details. The universe didn't sit down with spreadsheets, flow charts, and think, well, let's see. First, we'll need biology, chemistry, physics, good. Math. We need lots and lots of math to justify reality. No. The universe saw the end result, and like that, all of the sciences, all of the mathematics that support reality sprang into being. The greatest secret of manifestation is that thought of the end forces circumstance, the circumstances of your life. You could say there's a three-step process, real simple process, for all time-space manifestations. Number one, you define the end in thought, clear as you can. Number two, you generally move in the direction of your dreams. The general direction, not exactly. You don't have to know the precise pace and direction. Your movement, however, which is step two, inspires the universe, who then rearranges the players and circumstances of your life as if they were puppets on a marionette strings, predisposing you to life's so-called accidents, coincidences, and serendipities, yielding step three, a new manifestation in a brand new present. The present may have jarred you because we think it happens in the other order. Most human beings think that every journey begins in the here and now. Few realize that the power of now exists only in thought. They think, this is it, okay, we're going to have a journey, I need to get to point B. They're starting out in the quagmire, the murk and mire of illusions, so it's only natural that they think to get to point B, they need to manipulate the illusions around them. Talk to Mary, who knows Betty, who's doing the interviewing. This is messing with a cursed house. They think if they do this, then they're going to have a dream come true at some point in the future. But if you see your dream coming true in the future, that's typically where it stays. The present is the culmination of this process. Today's illusions right now, the culmination of yesterday's thoughts and yesterday's journeys. I saw these mechanics play themselves out in the most astounding way for the first time they caught my attention at least, 20 years ago. I was living in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. I had spent the evening riding horses with friends in the desert. Around 9 p.m., I said my goodbyes, moseyed over to my car, began the drive home. 20 minutes into that drive, at 50 miles per hour, thinking I was the only car on the road, there was a flash out of the corner of my eye. Someone ran a traffic light. I broadsided them. Cars were destroyed, bodies mangled, nobody suffered more than a week's worth of time in the hospital. But as I was sitting on the curb, dazed and confused, by metaphor, I was suddenly struck again with the mind-bending perfection of what had just happened. At 25 years old, I was way beyond believing in coincidences or chance accidents. Yet that would mean that the choreography of the last 20 minutes would be virtually impossible. That would mean if I had dawdled saying my goodbyes by 1/10 of a second, there would not have been an accident. Because I did the math later, so I could share it with you. Traveling at 50 miles per hour, traveling at 50 miles per hour, you're flying at 75 feet per second. That's practically the width of this room per second. Doing the math some more, that meant if I had arrived at that intersection 1/10 of a second earlier or later, the two cars would have completely missed one another. So, if I had dawdled saying my goodbyes by 1/10 of a second, if I had fumbled for the keys in my pocket by 1/10 of a second more, if I had sat in my car and a fly flew in and distracted me, if I had been of a different mood that evening, played faster music than I was playing, maybe drove a teensy bit faster, or maybe kind of depressed or melancholy, playing classical music or no music, driving just a teensy bit slower, If I had seen the car coming with enough time to tap the brakes, 1/10 of a second, the choreography in those 20 minutes. Do you see it too? The perfection, the impossible perfection. Impossible, that is, if you use your physical senses alone to interpret reality. Impossible if you think circumstances give rise to circumstances instead of understanding it is thought that gives rise to circumstances. Impossible if you think all manifestations occur along a linear timeline. But the very same perfection is entirely possible when you peek behind the curtains of time and space and you see that that entire event, the entire 20 minutes, was designed without their constraints, beginning with the end. It's the only way. It's just like when they make a movie. They don't shoot the thing linearly. They go shoot the key parts, the twists in the plot, and then they can back in to do splice together an entire film that makes sense. The only way that you could have the precision of two cars traveling at 50 miles an hour smack dead on, I hit them square between the wheels, would be if you designed that event beginning with the end. Like trick photography. You know where the moment of impact is going to be. Then and only then can you impute force where I should be 1/10 of a second before impact. Then you can deduce backwards. Where should I be 17 and a half seconds before impact? Then you can go back to 19 minutes, 3 seconds and a half before impact. All of this would then be forced, designed from the end backwards. And here is a big kicker. I thought I was under control of the entire episode. I thought I left my friends when I wanted to leave. I thought I made my way to the car at the pace I was comfortable with. I thought I played the music I wanted to play. I thought I felt the way I wanted to feel. A couple of red flags just been thrown on the field. Is he saying we don't have control of our lives? I've clearly implied we don't have control over the cursed hows in any journey. We have absolute control over the end result. That end result, a car crash, I'll explain in just a minute. But it's like you go into a blockbuster movie. You have total control of the title you're after, the genre, perhaps the characters, when it was made. You pick it just like you pick your dreams. But you have no control over how that DVD is going to play out. Who's going to do what to who during the story? Neither do we have control over the cursed hows in our lives while maintaining control of the end result. So why am I talking about a traffic accident to illustrate this? First off, I could have repeated the story I shared here 3 years ago, how I took a little picture of Hong Kong Island, put it into a scrapbook. It was a place I'd never been before, visualized on it intently for 2 years, walked the talk, pretended I was that person, and then 2 years later was shocked to find myself having breakfast in the Regent Hotel, looking at Hong Kong Island from the photographer's vantage point. I could tell you that story. I could tell you stories about the Adventurers Club and the international travel, the international adventures, the friends, the harmony, the laughter that I've been experiencing the last 6 years. But I don't think there's any story I could share with you that would illustrate as well the virtually impossible choreography conducted by the universe as it forces the circumstances to yield an end result. As a traffic accident. In a traffic accident, you see that nanoseconds are life and death. 1/10 of a second meant no accident whatsoever. Yet the whole thing was under control. Then there's the question, well, were you thinking about an accident? Why is that one of your end results? Why are we talking about a traffic accident? These are commentaries given to me by my mother. I don't get it, Mike. Okay, Why a traffic accident? Whenever the unexpected lands in your path, it is always a stepping stone in a journey to a place that you have been thinking about. In other words, whenever the unthought of end result manifests before your very eyes, it is always because just beyond it, as a means to getting just beyond it, there is something that you were thinking about. For me back then, two things were going on. I wanted desperately to know more about the nature of reality. That's always been the theme in my life. And number two, I was desperately, excessively materialistic, trying to find everybody that was a royal family. Turns out the car I hit was full of royals. I had to go to jail for that one. But I was on the wrong track. I knew it. I couldn't get grounded. So this accident was programmed by me as an end result to an end result. It was designed to knock some sense into me two ways. But that's not important. What I'm trying to get at by using an accident to illustrate the mechanics, the intricacies, is for you to say, yay, I totally see what you're saying, or no, I'm going to choose the route of I believe in coincidences or accidents. Because you either believe in random chance accidents and coincidences, or you realize there's something else going on. And when you see something going on, like this car accident, or any manifestation in your life, then you too can peek behind the curtains. You too can say, is there a process here? Is something going on? Because if there is, you can take advantage of it. How does Tiger Woods do it? He plays impossible golf. I saw him on TV a couple of years ago. I was watching a tournament in Maui. All the big players hit the ball out into the ocean where it landed on a green. Once they got out there, and this is where I tuned in, gale force winds on their little putt-putt thing in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. The wind was so strong that their pant legs were flapping like flags. You could hear the pants flapping over the roar of the wind. It was so bad that day. And then Tiger, he's 45 feet away from the cup. That's like from me to the wall. Yet Tiger lines up like he knows what he's doing. And he aims, and he lets go of that ball, and then over the roar of the wind and the flapping of the trousers, the audience gasps. Because immediately the trajectory shows that ball going 2-3 yards off the mark. Until it hits the first berm. And begins self-correcting. The audience is back on track until it overcorrects. Trajectory shows it a couple yards off. I mean, it was 45 feet. But then it hit the second berm. And it starts self-correcting. This is going to be a phenomenal putt. There's like 1 yard to go. It's really slowing down. He's going to end up within 2 inches of the cup, 45 feet away on gale-forced winds. We thought, until the wind blew the ball in the hole. That's impossible for a physical body, flesh and bone, brain, to take into account all of the considerations necessary to make that happen. How does Tiger do it? He focuses on an end result. He vibrates to the tune of, I am a below par golfer. No matter where I go, I am world class. I am number one. And that vision forces the circumstances and the details of his life to make it so. It forces the tournaments he chooses. It forces the coaching he gets. It forces the change in caddies. And it takes into account everything, including the lay of the grass on that putting green in Maui and the direction it's slanting towards the sun. It takes into account the wind. It takes into account, the universe does, when we move in the direction of our dreams, the face of the club and how hard we hit it and the lay of the land. Thought forces circumstance. And how is it that the number one salesperson in an office is usually not necessarily that good looking or that popular or that different than anybody else? Except that every month And almost every year, they lead the pack. It's because looks, popularity have nothing to do with leading the pack. They see themselves as a producer. They see that it's possible. They think like they're number one. And then lo and behold, no matter what they do or don't do about it, Big Mac in their mouth, on the phone at lunchtime, some big hitter calls and makes their month from Idaho. They're always on the right end of the phone at the right time, whether they're making cold calls or receiving them. How is it that the novelist who writes bestsellers, fiction, story after story reaches the top of the list, plot after plot is unpredictable? This is my favorite one because it's not just the players and circumstances of our lives that are moved around. We are infused with inspiration, with creativity, with vision, plot twist, characters, whatever we need to see the end come to pass. They see themselves as a world-class storyteller. They see themselves as capable of spinning out fantastic stories. And so they are given, infused with what it takes up here. And how is it that the rich keep getting richer? No matter how stupid they are. It's because intelligence has never had anything to do with accumulating wealth and abundance. For whatever reason, those folks are able to see themselves as wealthy. Good, bad, easy, difficult, doesn't matter. If they can see it, if they can vibrate at it, they will be in the right place at the right time again and again and again in spite of themselves. The right investment, the right new friend, the right partner. It is unending. And it works just the same way with that person who just gets by paycheck to paycheck. Never has any more money left over at the end of the month. They come to me, they send me an email, talk to me after class. Mike Dooley, I get thoughts becoming things. I get it. I'm living the best life except for the money nut. I cannot crack the money nut. That declaration is one of their end results. And the universe hears. And it, in its infinite wisdom and magnificence, plots to make it true. So that poor person who gets by paycheck to paycheck and is vibrating, focusing on living that vision, all of a sudden, somehow, inherits $20,000, $50,000, $100,000. What happens to the money? Gone. Because simultaneously, lo and behold, what a coincidence, the roof needed fixing. The air system went out. The transmission fall off. Broke down. The little kids all of a sudden have college expenses. Somehow, some way, it's going to work that they don't have abundance. To back up the overview one more time, when you see that end result in your mind, instantaneously, behind the curtains of time and space, there is the sequence to make that manifestation come true mapped out. The instant you have clarity on what change you want to manifest or what life you want to leave or lead or what it is you want to draw into your sphere, the instant you have clarity, the entire map is known. And if you can at least move in the general direction of your dream, demonstrating faith, demonstrating belief, and giving the universe the opportunity to put players and circumstances on your path, that sequence will be allowed to play itself out. But back here, with your physical senses watching that sequence play out, it's not going to make a lot of sense sometimes. You're going to say, I didn't think of that. Or you'll be prone to say sometimes, I must be doing this wrong. There must be something blocking me, an invisible limiting belief sabotaging my progress. Well, there wasn't, but now there is. Whatever you are vibrating upon, thinking about, changes the physical world. I'm simply talking about thoughts becoming things. The main message I have for any group, any audience. It's just that right now you and I are not in a nighttime dream. We're not between lives. We're not in the twilight zone. And that means when it comes to manifesting something new in our life, say gold coins in our hand, we generally can't do that, generally cannot manifest that simply out of the ether. Okay, we're in a continuum that already exists and there's other people's thoughts going on. So alternatively, every bit as miraculously, if we still hold on to that vision with gold coins in our hand and we move with that vision, the next thing you know, somebody's going to be dropping them in there physically through a transaction that you were unable to be a part of because of XYZ circumstances. It all boils down to thoughts becoming things. A metaphor for you to understand how the end forces the details. You all know what MapQuest is, right? You type in the address that you want to go to, it tells you how to get there instantaneously. Now there's Magellan, you know, the digital satellite inboard navigation system that comes complete with the really cutting-edge brand-new cars. The universe is like Magellan. This little piece of modern marvel, this high technology that reads satellite signals, is not worth its weight in scrap metal if you don't enter an end result. If you don't have a destination that you're thinking about. But even if you do have a destination or an end result, yet don't put your car in gear. It's worthless. Completely. It's like having a dream and doing nothing about it. It's not that you have to hit the home run. That's not why you're out there doing stuff. You're pitching the ball so the universe can hit the home run, but it can't hit it unless you're out there. What is it that you most want? What changes would you like to manifest in your life? Define it in terms of the end result as clearly as you possibly can. Eat, sleep, and breathe it. Do not base your decisions for your life or your actions on the illusions around you. Base them all on the vision. And then as you move with it, the all-conspiring universe will do the hard part, predisposing you to circumstances beyond your control that will yield the manifestation of what you're after. Fellow adventurers, each of you are supernatural beings of light whose thoughts become the things and events of your life, for whom all things are possible. And this, being a creation amongst your own creations in the jungles of time and space, is as good as it gets. Because whenever you don't like what's before you, you can change it. Without hindrance from the past or so-called contracts you no longer remember, there are no other rules. There's no hidden agenda. And there are no unknown variables working against you in this Garden of Eden. This paradise we temporarily get to call home. Where manifesting change couldn't possibly be any easier than getting what you think about, defining an end result, and moving towards it. Oh yeah. Way better than winning the lottery. I'm glad you could make it today. I hope to see you this afternoon. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks very much.